Ever feel like history plays favorites? Like we only get the highlight reel, not the whole story.
Yeah.
Well, buckle up because today's deep dive is about to rewrite what you thought you knew about video games. We're going way back to 1971 before the arcades were bumping with Pac-Man or Donkey Kong. Heck, even before Pong.
Wow. Okay. Before Pawn.
Our subject, a game called Computer Space, and the engineer who made the magic happen, Ted Dabney.
And what's so compelling about Dabney's story is that it challenges the dominant narrative.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the whole Nolan Bushnell as the sole video game visionary thing. When you dig deeper, you realize there was this incredible engineering mind behind the scenes making those early games tick.
Right. And thankfully, we're working from this rare 2010 interview with Dabney.
Oh, wow.
And let me tell you, the man was a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah.
Sadly, he's no longer with us, but his words paint a vivid picture. It's clear he was far more than just a silent partner to Bushnell.
Absolutely. He wasn't some kid tinkering in his garage.
Yeah.
This was a seasoned engineer from Ampex, a company at the forefront of technology. They developed the video recorders used for the Apollo missions, for crying out loud.
What?
That's the kind of experience Dabney brought to the table.
Whoa, wait. So the guy who helped put humans on the moon, Ellis Oven, gave us the first video game?
It is.
That's kind of mind-blowing.
And it highlights how innovation often emerges from seemingly unrelated fields. In the interview, Dabney even draws a direct line between his work at Ampex with electron beam scanning, think old school TV technology, and how he used that knowledge to create the visuals for Computer Space.
That's an incredible background. So how did he go from working on the Apollo missions to creating Computer Space? Was it like a light bulb moment, this a sudden urge to make a game?
It's actually quite a charming story. Dabney describes how he built the very first Computer Space prototype in his spare time, even testing it out in his daughter's bedroom.
Oh, it's kind of adorable. I bet she had the coolest room in the neighborhood. But okay, so he's got this homemade video game. How does it go from a passion project to an actual arcade cabinet? Did he have investors knocking down his door?
Not quite. It wasn't quite like the tech startup scene we see today. Dabney and Bushnell, operating under the name Systigy, realized they needed help to manufacture and distribute the game on a larger scale. Enter Nutting Associates.
Nutting Associates. So were they like the big dogs of the arcade world back then?
Not exactly. Think of them more like the Trivia Night Kings. They were known for those quiz games you'd find in bars. Not exactly cutting-edge stuff.
Okay, so not exactly masters of the digital frontier,
Right.
but they had the manufacturing muscle Syzygy needed.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that Dabney and Bushnell owned Computer Space,
Right.
but they needed Nutting to actually build and distribute the cabinets.
A classic tale of tech brains meeting the muscle of mass production. But I'm curious, did he strike me as resentful, having to hand over his creation to a company that didn't necessarily share his vision?
You know, that's what makes this interview so fascinating.
Yeah.
You can tell Dabney was already thinking long term. He even claims to have personally designed that iconic, engineered by Syzygy inscription on the control panel.
No way,
Yeah,
really.
yeah.
I always wondered about that little detail.
It speaks volumes, doesn't it? Like,
Yeah.
he wanted to make sure their mark was on the game, even if Nutting was handling the logistics.
That's some serious foresight. But let's get into the nitty-gritty of the game itself. We've talked about Dabney's engineering background, but this was 1971. How did they even begin to create a video game without the microchips and processors we take for granted today?
This is where Dabney's ingenuity really shines through.
Yeah.
In the interview, he compares the technology to something like a Model T or a World War I fighter plane. They weren't dealing with software and code as we know it.
You're saying they were working with completely different building blocks.
Precisely. No CPUs, ROMs, or RAM.
Wow.
They essentially built the entire game logic using individual components, counters, logic gates, a symphony of circuits all working together.
Hold on, that's like trying to build a smartphone using nothing but gears and levers. I can barely work my TV remote. I wouldn't even know where to start.
Right, it's mind-boggling. And it gets even better.
What?
Dabney reveals he created the game's sound effects using something called noisy Zener diodes.
Noisy what now? Okay, you're gonna have to break that down for me.
So a Zener diode is basically this little electrical component. And by carefully selecting them for their specific electrical noise, Dabney was able to generate those distinct beeps and boops that gave Computer Space its audio character.
Now that is thinking outside the box. You know, we take it for granted now, but those early sound effects, they were revolutionary at the time. And the gameplay itself, Was that all Dabney's doing too?
A lot of it, yes. Even the concept of hyperspace, which you see in countless games today, originated with the Dabney.
Get out.
In computer space, it's that visual effect when your ship jumps to a different part of the screen.
So Dabney is the godfather of hyperspace. That's amazing. But hold on. If he was such a visionary and the game was this innovative, what happened with netting? You mentioned they weren't exactly tech savvy.
That's where things get even more interested. Dabney doesn't go into a ton of detail in this particular interview, but he hints at some, shall we say, miscalculations on netting's part.
Like what? Did they not market it right or something?
Exactly. From what we know, netting didn't quite know how to sell computer space. They weren't targeting the right audience. And honestly, the game was pretty complex for casual players at the time.
That makes sense. It wasn't exactly plug and play.
Yeah.
You needed some serious hand-eye coordination to navigate those spaceships.
Precisely. So while computer space did have its moment in the sun, even appearing in movies like Soylent Green and Jaws.
Wait, seriously? Jaws?
Yep. It even had a cameo in Jaws.
Mm.
But even with that, it never quite reached the level of mainstream success as, say, Pong, which, as you know, is where Atari enters the picture.
Ah, Atari.
Yeah.
Speaking of changing the game, literally. Okay, so we've gone from Ampex to computer space and now to the birth of Atari. This is quite the journey, but I have a feeling it's about to get complicated.
You could say that.
Yeah.
Because as Atari takes off, the relationship between Dabney and Bushnell starts to fray.
So we're at this pivotal moment. Atari's on the horizon, poised to become a household name. But underneath it all, there's this tension brewing between Dabney, the engineering genius, and Bushnell, the business-minded partner. What was at the heart of their conflict?
Well, from the interview, you get the sense that Dabney was increasingly uncomfortable with Bushnell's singular focus on financial success.
Yeah.
Like, money was the only measure of achievement for Bushnell.
Right.
Remember how Dabney refused to cash his paychecks for months?
Right. That totally threw me when I first heard that in the interview.
Yeah.
It's like he almost didn't care about the money.
Right.
At least not in the way Bushnell did.
Exactly. And that difference in values, that fundamental disconnect, mm-hmm. comes to a head when Atari was still in its very early stages.
Okay.
They were operating out of this rundown former roller rink.
Yeah.
Dabney actually tells this hilarious story about literally cutting a hole in the wall just to get more office space, and Bushnell's going on and on about how rich they were all going to be.
Oh, man. Classic.
And Dabney's response is legendary.
He basically says something like, the only thing that's going to change is the number of zeros on our paychecks. I mean, can you imagine saying that to your business partner?
It speaks volumes about Dabney's character, doesn't it?
Totally.
This wasn't just about the money for him. It was about staying true to his values, to the pure joy of innovation, even if it meant walking away from a potential fortune, which, as we know, he eventually did.
Although it sounds like his departure from Atari was...
Well, messy is an understatement, right?
It does sound that way, yes.
No.
In the interview, Dabney suggests that Bushnell orchestrated his ouster from Atari. Apparently, Bushnell fed him some misleading information about a business deal, then let the board use that against him.
Wow. That's cold. Did Dabney talk about how that felt? I mean, that must have been a huge blow. He doesn't dwell on it, but you can hear the disappointment in his voice. It really makes you think about how history remembers these tech pioneers.
Right.
It's rarely as simple as the headlines make it seem.
So what happened to Dabney after Atari? Did he continue working in the gaming industry?
He dabbled for a bit.
Okay.
Consulted for Bushnell a few times.
Oh, wow.
Even designed the original scorekeeping system for Chuck E. Cheese. Talk about a weird twist of fate.
From groundbreaking video games to Chuck E. Cheese. Okay, that's pretty wild.
Right. But ultimately, he left the gaming world behind and ended up running a grocery store with his wife.
Wow. From building the first video games to running a grocery store, it makes you wonder what he thought about it all, you know, looking back on his life.
And that's the most remarkable part, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the interview, he sounds content. Yeah. The man who helped launch a multi-billion dollar industry found peace and fulfillment away from the spotlight, away from the corporate world. It makes you think about what truly matters.
It really does. So as we wrap things up here, what's the key takeaway you hope listeners will hold on to from Dabney's story?
I think it's a reminder to look beyond the surface.
Yeah.
To remember the unsung heroes, the ones who quietly shape our world.
Right.
Ted Dabney may not be a household name, but his story, his ingenuity, his commitment to his values, it's an important piece of tech history and a reminder that true innovation often happens in the shadows.
Beautifully said. And on that note, we'll leave you with this. Whose stories are we missing? Next time you boot up your favorite game, remember Ted Dabney, the engineer who dared to imagine a world where a moving dot on a screen could spark a revolution?